The following program has been brought to you by Rolling Press, a family-run, eco-friendly printing company. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
Hi, this is Celia Kutcher, host of Animal Instinct, and you are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil wants his groove in them rhythm and blues, that's him. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. And I am hanging out in the studio, drinking some champagne with my buddy Nicholas Blasi, the proprietor, importer, distributor of PM Spirits, a really amazing company that's been bringing in some really, really cool and unique cognac, Pinot Noir, like all kinds of amazing stuff that really gets me excited about buying booze for my bars. Welcome to the show, Nicholas.
Thanks, man.
Really good to have you here.
Cool. Yeah, I'm excited. That's it's nice. I was here like 4 years ago. And it was just like by myself, almost like got robbed on the way to, you know, Roberta's. And now it's like, it's crazy. I mean, this place has changed tremendously.
Oh, yeah, it totally has. It's crazy that you were here 4 years ago and see that, like, you walked in and you were like, dude, I can't believe there's a backyard. You know, it's weird. But much like the progress of this place, you've been really progressing for the last four and a half-ish years that you started getting into this. To the spirits side of things, fairly recently ago, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I started the business about 4.5 years. Now it's probably going to be soon 5 because I've been saying 4.5 for a long time now. It started. I was doing other stuff before. I wasn't really happy with, you know, the line of work I was in, and I you know, made a switch about, yeah, let's say 5 years ago now.
You told me before you were a chemical engineer before you got into this.
Yeah, but that's not something we want to spread. I wasted a lot of time studying and then working a few years in France and working a few years in the U.S. and then. Because I'm not too bright. It took me like 6 years to realize that chemical engineering sucked. So I decided to try to do something that I really would, you know, like doing.
Yeah.
And I drink a lot of booze. So. Yeah.
Well, that makes so much sense to me. Were you like a fan? Did you ever like? Work in bartending or any kind of restaurant.
Dude,
or
never,
bar.
Never in my life.
Like, no, you were just like totally a fan.
That's the thing. Whenever I meet people and I pour some of those booze that we import, distribute, or whatever, I usually like make a point of like pouring booze all over the bars or like all over the table because I've never worked service one day in my life, so I just suck at it. But it's no, I guess it's more like I was drinking a lot of spirits. I was drinking quite a bit of wines too, and I was very dumb. I still am, but I was very dumb like 5 years ago, and I thought I knew shit. Like I really thought that like you gotta understand there's a cultural thing where you're French. When you're French, you know. That's what my people do, right?
Yeah.
So you're French and you're from Bordeaux. You know Bordeaux, even though you had like, you know, 4 wines in your life. Just the fact that you live there makes you feel that you know everything about it.
Sure, I get it.
So I had a relationship with a friend of my grandfather who was a cognac maker. And like up until like day 2 in the business, I was really sure that I knew stuff.
You were kind of a snob about it?
Oh, yeah, but you don't realize it because you're French, so it's in you. You see?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you realize like you're full of shit. You don't know anything, and you should really work hard because otherwise you're gonna, it's not gonna go too far.
What was the what were some of the like the first things that actually like that struck you like first of all like as far as like a wine or a spirit, was it cognac? And was that one of the things that like really? I mean, I guess you just kind of grew into it. You grew up with it, right?
Yeah, I mean it's like. I grew up in a family like I've been raised like half by my grandparents, half by my mother, and I lived at my grandparents' place when I was young, and they were making wine in Bordeaux, like nothing fancy, just like, you know, usual table wine. It would be like, you know, $14.99 on the shelf here or something. And that's so you start drinking fairly early, not like a lot of wine, but you know, everybody drinks wine around the table for lunch or dinner, so you get a few drops or whatever, and so you get into
Vinla O,
huh?
Vinla O,
yeah, exactly, and then it all goes from there. So you know, you start tasting wine when you're like 4 or 5, and then you get to you know, through family, friends, and stuff, I got to taste cognacs because I remember my grandfather and my uncle and stuff having cognac after the family meal, watching at the Formula One championships on Sundays, and I guess that's it grew very organically. I don't have any story of like a 47 Cheval Blanc double Magnum that, you know, struck me and I realized that I should be in the wine business.
See, I think that if Americans weren't so Puritan, then we would also. I mean, I guess, I don't know, Jack could probably say something about this, but I feel like we would also be very snobby about like bourbon, you know, if we were able to, you know, drink it at the table when we're like 5 or 6, you know, with a little bit of water, of course. Then we'd probably be even snobbier than we are about our whiskeys when most people don't really in the United States know.
Yeah,
much
it's
about
it's
it.
Like it's likely, but you'd be just number two, right behind the French. Like, this is something.
French is always number one.
As far as snobbery goes, yeah, that's you can't beat them. They're pretty far.
I Bordeaux is one of like the most beautiful cities I've ever seen in my life, and. I'm very jealous of that. You know, I love where I'm from in Oklahoma, but man, Bordeaux is a beautiful, beautiful city, especially at night. You know, it's a crazy town.
No, it's cool. I mean, you want to make sure that you grab dinner before like 8:45 p.m. because otherwise, you're gonna wait the next day, right?
Again, you're getting breakfast.
But
yeah.
You know, other than that, yeah, it's a pretty cool city. But you know, I mean, it's like. I grew up there, so I'm biased.
Yeah, totally.
But it looks like, especially now, they did a lot of renovations and stuff. It looks pretty good.
Yeah, totally. When did you move to the United States?
So about 10 years ago. I've been working on my accent since then. hasn't worked too well so far.
How is your? You have to say y'all.
Y'all, yeah, y'all. I do that. I adapt. I usually adapt. Like when I work the Texas market,
yeah.
I do the y'all thing, and then I follow up with like broken English, and people are just
and everyone
like,
giggles, and then they buy your products, right?
And then people ask me where I'm from, and it's just like, you know, oh, okay.
You say like Louisiana. You could get away with it.
I usually go with when I'm not in Texas. When people ask me where I'm from, I usually go with Texas. I do like I'm from Houston, Texas, and there is like a stop, people just like, you know, wait a few seconds and look at me and like that's weird because maybe it's been you know like kept into like a cave or something, or, like, captured by French people in Houston, Texas.
I've heard that's a thing. Now, so you've been here 10 years, and you got into this about 4.5 years ago. Well, 4.5 years, mm-hmm. forever, right?
Right, exactly.
But so you saw something in the market that you thought needed to come through. Like, first of all, you're really hardcore into brandies. That's what.
Yeah, that's my thing. I have a hands-on relationship with brandies in the sense that I started with a small cellar of mine, just a few casks of stuff that, a few casks of cognac that I had that I still have in the cognac region, like in Grand Champagne. I have this like a little shack that where there's a, you know, some casks. I think there's somebody who's trying to.
Somebody's trying to break into the studio right now. they heard cognac and then they started breaking in.
But so that's how I started. So, and there's the chemist in me sort of likes to understand how stuff works, and especially the aging process. So I worked a little bit. I mean, not like professionally per se. Like I've never spent like 4 years in my cellar every day trying to do stuff. But it's really something that I try to that I try to understand what happened if you, I don't know, if you want to bring down the proof of something. What do you use? How do you do it? When you make a blend, like, how does that work? Do you blend everything together? Do you start by putting in that tank or that cask, whatever is the brandy you have that's lower proof, or do you start by what's higher proof? Or how does it work? So that's the kind of stuff that I started to do, and I got more knowledge that way. And so brandy would be like cognac, and then by extension, brandy would be sort of my first, like, yeah, the first love, if you will.
I like how you mentioned Texas before, because Denison, Texas, is the sister city to cognac.
All right, baby. See?
Yeah.
So now I got the legitimate
yeah.
thing
yeah,
to say.
It all comes full circle, right?
All right.
Because, like, during the late 19th century, when there was the phylloxera breakout, that killed off a lot of the grape harvest, you know, most of it in most of Europe. There was, I forget his name. What was his name? Anyway, he was a botanist and
yeah, you're right. I've read that thing. I've never put two and two together, but that's actually, all right, cool.
Yeah, yeah, he was the one who grafted the rootstocks
sure.
to the American rootstocks to the European rootstocks to basically save the grape harvests to continue producing cognac. There's a memorial to him in the middle of the city of cognac.
Yeah, that's correct.
So it's a good thing that you're going in Texas, you know.
Exactly.
It's paying them back, you know, like, yep. paying gratitude. yeah, I think that the brandy market in the United States is crazy, and I think we talked a little bit about this before the show. It's just, you know, a lot of it's like very like brand driven, and what you're bringing in is a lot of kind of more obscure, more like producer forward rather than brand forward juice. You know, you're bringing a lot of cool stuff to the market.
The idea is to bring, whether it's like cognac, Armagnac, like whatever kind of booze we can think of, like bring the grower version of that thing.
Mm-hmm.
So like now everybody does handcrafted, craft, artisanal, small batch, whatever, however you name it. But the idea is to focus on the juice first, like mm-hmm. the quality of what's in the ball. It's not about a specific brand. It's not about a cute marketing story or like money thrown at people or like throwing parties and shit. It's just like, you know, just trying to get to whoever is into spirits, trying to get that person to experience what's really made by real people, like people who don't cut corners, don't use additives, don't buy stuff from, you know, the co-op or like other producers,
and
sort of like, yeah, then like bought that under their own name and say, yeah, that's ours. It's just like people who, like farmers, would do stuff that they've been doing for generations, and they just, that's it.
I love the idea of the grower champagne, grower cognac, you know, like anything that's like the grower, like, because it really is the original. It's like the OG version of the like local, like organic, you know, it's, this was grown on our land.
Yep.
Then we harvest it, and then we produce the wine, and then we distill it, and then we age it. It all happened on this plot of land. You know, it's the original style. You know, we, like you said, like there's a lot of marketing strategies that romanticize and come up with this cute story about their spirit, and, you know, how they made it, and like this whole like backstory that mm-hmm. most of the time is
bullshit.
Fake.
Yeah,
it's
sure.
bullshit, yeah. You know. But I really like the idea of the grower champagne.
If you think about it, like if you look at, you know, the restaurant business or the bar business, and you, like, people are really into the provenance of everything. So you'll go to a restaurant, and even like the wood for the benches or the table have been like sourced locally or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people know the name, the guy know the name of the farmer who they get the eggs from. And then you go at the bar and you have a cocktail where the base spirit is something that's like, you know, $12 for a little rum that is mass produced by a distillery that looks like it could be making any kind of industry.
Looks like a military base.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a compound. And you're like, oh, that's cool. All right. So isn't there a disconnect there? Like, yeah. If like your wine list is just amazing. There's like 70,000 wines. You cover every vintages from every producer in the Loire Valley. Everybody who aged stuff in clay is represented on your wine list. And then on the spirits list, you get the main suspect. Like, it looks like, oftentimes it looks like an airport bar selection, because that's the same brands that one finds all the time. I got nothing against those brands. I'm just saying, you know, there are real stuff out there, and there should be a place for those.
Yeah.
Like, there's people will ask for brands, and you know, one wants Macallan 12, one should be able to purchase Macallan 12. But there's a bunch of other stuff out there, so why only stocking Macallan 12? And I have nothing to against Macallan 12, just by the way, but it's just an example.
Absolutely, man. And, you know, I want the bottle that doesn't have a label on it. You know,
I mean, it can be that bottle can be that bottle can be crap. It could be real good, but at least you tried it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can, and then it's another. It gives you something to think about, and you're like, oh, okay, I like this, I like that. Maybe I don't like this style, and you just like evolve. That's how we all learn about stuff. It's like you try, and then you move forward. And that's what we're trying to do at a small scale on the booze side.
Cool. Yeah. Hey, Nicholas, let's take a real quick break, and then we'll get back to talking about some of the really. I want to really jump into some of the spirits that you're carrying, because I'm really a huge fan of them. I'm already carrying some of them, so let's get right back.
Today's program was brought to you by Rolling Press. Rolling Press is a family-run digital and offset print house that brings together eco-friendly methods, ethical practices, and personalized service. Using environmentally responsible papers, non-toxic inks, and wind power, Rolling Press represents the harmony of traditional craftsmanship and mindful sustainability. Rolling Press offers advice on reducing paper waste and energy consumption, helping you save money and minimize your carbon footprint. For more information, visit rollingpress.com.
And we are back. You're listening to The Speakeasy, and I got my buddy Nicholas Blonzi in the studio.
Yeah.
And he just pulled out something crazy. So I just pulled out a crazy thing, too.
You're like, all right, that's a 22-inches knife.
I couldn't find a wine key to open this, but he just... We were talking right before the break about all these great spirits that he brings in, and then he went ahead and just popped open out of his bag a... Very, very high proof, special cognac.
That's just some things that we're playing around. It's never going to become a brand or anything, but it's just something to get people to look at brandies and cognac in this case in a different manner. So here, that stuff is one dude in Grand Champagne cognac. Operates one of the last wood-fired pot still in one of the last wood-fired pot still in Grand Champagne, so you watch out, because this is pretty high proof. It's a single cask. It's 250 liters. The stuff is about, they say, it's 20 year. They usually tend to inflate that a bit. So I would say I would place it like 16 to 18 years old. Nothing has been done to it, unfiltered, foolproof. It's 64.3% alcohol. And that's like, this is something that I'm going to pour to people who drink, you know, the T-Stag, the Weller, the Handy, the, you know, all the Buffalo Trace Anti Collection stuff. Like people who are into foolproof spirits. There is like, this is really authentic cognac. Maybe it needs water. Maybe it needs an ice cube. But that stuff is straight from the cask, wood fired, but still distilled. That stuff is that, you know, that's.
Well, we're in the studio. We're not in a bar or in our kitchen, so we don't have a faucet for putting water in this. So we're gonna have to just drink it the way it is.
You know.
Whoa. So I approve.
that stuff is tight. That stuff is concentrated. It's just, it has a lot of flavors to it. There's some alcohol, obviously. I mean, 64.3%. You're far away from the.
They heard us talking about the cognac. Now they're trying to break back in.
They want some. They want some. But it's that's just to show that, you know, cognac, Armagnac, like brandy, can be very versatile, and you know, people out there need to give a chance to. You know, like small guys, brands, or like non-brands, they've never heard about. Just give it a shot. Maybe you'll be surprised.
Yeah, but that's exactly what you're doing. You know, you're actually giving a shot to the little brands. You know, and you yourself are starting out, and it's great. I mean, you're bringing in like the coolest stuff. I mean, like Pinot de Charente. You've got these crazy rums that you've brought. First of all, I haven't had this one yet, so I'm really psyched that this even in the studio. It's a
Goury de Châteauville.
Châteauville.
So it's you know, see, just the name itself, it's never going to become a brand because nobody can pronounce it.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's call it like GC.
I think after a couple of glasses of this, I'd probably be able to do it.
Yeah,
get loose and. You know.
But. Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff out there, and those are not the only things you know, available, and then there's like a bunch of other people bringing cool stuff. It's just like, you know, there's a word beyond the, like, the big brands. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you know, like when I was in France, when I was in Cognac and Yarnac and Bordeaux, like I would go to the little bottle shops, and I brought back a little bit more than I was probably legally able to get on the airplane. And then quite a bit more when I went to duty free.
Right.
But I loved picking up stuff like this, like the bottles that I didn't recognize, you know, and, you know, taking a chance on. But like, you've already sourced this stuff, and it's already like, your brand, your company is bringing in just the coolest stuff, man. I mean, like, this is great.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
This is one of the coolest cognacs I've ever had, actually. I'm not bullshitting you because we're live on the radio. This is really cool, man. And this is such a legit pleasure. Wow. Okay. Well, let's talk about some of the other things now because I'm going to freak out. First of all, you got the Navarre cognacs and Pinot de Charente.
Right.
You got the Rosé Pinot de Charente, which I carry at Prime Eats.
Yep.
And it is... awesome. It is so good, man. That one is amazing. All the Pinot Noir you carry is amazing. You've got these crazy rums. Tell me a little bit about the rums, because those are pretty intense, man.
The idea is, I got friends in Spain. Their name is, they started a small company a few years ago named Equipo Navazos, and they're known in the geeky world of sherry, you know, drinkers. As the guy who sourced, you know, cool single cask sherries. And then we started to talk about 3 years ago about what I was doing in Cognac and Armagnac and what they were doing in with sherries. And we figured there was no, nobody really was bottling single cask, pure old Spanish brandy. So that's what we went after. And so like a few times a year, we travel and meet them to Inrejes in Spain. And then we go to bodegas, we taste. And then last year, like a year and a half ago, we found randomly like 30-something casks of rums, stuff that had been distilled in Dominican Republic, aged a little bit there, and then shipped to Jerez. and put in a little also sherry cask, and so we decided to bottle it and bring it here, and do like 15 odd bottles at a time, because that's really as much as I thought we could sell in a year, and that's about it. So the stuff is kind of different, it's a bone dry rum bottled full proof at 51% alcohol. There's a lot of Oloroso sherry characteristic on the meat palate, so it has this sweetness. But it's high acid, so it cleans after itself. So it's not like a dessert rum. It has like three dimensions on your palate just because of the Oloroso. But then it's like bone dry and like almost like savory on the finish. And it's like rum and sherry sort of.
I love
together.
Both of those things. So, they're in the same bottle.
Yeah, so it's like I like it a lot. It's I basically bring stuff that I like a lot. That I can stand like 100% behind and say, yeah, try it, you like it, you don't, but I really think it's cool and you should, drink it, and then we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, like, those rums are insane, and I would really push anyone into buying those, because, to me, we're talking after the show today about the next order I'm putting in with you. And I don't think any of my customers are really going to get to see that bottle, because I think it's all going to go to me. Along with this, the Gorita Chateauville.
Yeah, you don't want to drink both of them in the same seating.
Yeah, maybe not.
The next day, you're not going to go anywhere.
But at the same time, I have to say that you and I need to hang out more, because we have I'm into the same things that you're drinking, man. That's awesome. That's cool. If I were starting up an import and distribution brand, I would be pulling in the same kind of things that you're bringing in. So this is really great, man. How's it been? You said that you're, working 7 days a week. From the business side, it's a really ballsy move, to jump into this and bring in these really crazy, awesome, obscure brands. How's it been so far?
So far, it's been a lot of work and gone beyond expectation, though. Because I started with zero business plan and absolutely no knowledge of what I was doing 4.5 years ago, if I was redoing now, it would probably last 6 months, because I was pretty stupid at the time, because I didn't even know about the 3-tier system or whatever. But I guess I've been lucky so far. Been working pretty hard, got good people working with me. So we're still, we're small. It's we're all together. We're five. We're distributing our own stuff in New York. We work in 17 states. Some work better than others. It's a small operation. And the goal is to, we don't throw huge parties. We don't have a tour bus. We go one person at a time. Just taste people on stuff. Try to... open their eyes as to what's available out there, and hopefully we sell stuff. And then I live in my blacked out Lamborghini with my nothing crazy. Just like.
Well, man, it's been an awesome pleasure to have you on the show today, and thank you for bringing the cognac by. Jack's looking through the window, wondering when we're going to finish up the show so he can have some.
Thanks for having me.
Dude, you're truly. Very inspirational, man. A lot of people, a lot of people in the industry, like bartenders, waiters, restaurant, people really want to go big and do something very meaningful. And I feel like what you're doing for all of us is this is super, super fucking meaningful, man.
Thanks a lot. It means a lot. Appreciate
and it's great to have you on the show. And please come back anytime you'd like. I know your office is very close by, so that's a plus as well, And, really, Nicholas, it's been really great having you on the show today.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Have a good day.
All right. That's it for the Speakeasy this week. Check in to heritageradionetwork.org for many other shows like this one. Till next week. Cheers.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.